and welcome to another episode of Acts of the Blood Ghoul, an independent RPG pod ghost. I'm your host, Victor von Hunterstein, the scientist, not the monster. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Nadia Axford. How the hell are you, Nadia?
It's not an Olivia. That's
not an Olivia. Right. Yeah. Of course.
Okay. What's a vampire's favorite band?
I don't know, Nadia. What is a vampire's favorite band?
New Kids on the Bleh. That didn't come out right. New Kids on the Bleh. There, that's a count. That's a bleh.
You gotta say it like a vampire.
Yeah.
New Kids on the Bleh.
Yeah.
There we go.
Is it blah? Is it? Are you not supposed to hit the K at the end? Like New Kids on the Bleh.
I guess you can. I mean, it's not as bad as the... Oh, never mind. Go on. I'm a vampire.
And of course, with me as well, is my other lovely co-host, Eric Von Allenstein is the same, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to go for like an Eric Van Sylvania or something like that. Yeah. Like,
that's pretty good. I like that. Yeah.
I feel like vampiric names are really the easy ones to go for in this spooky season. So, yeah,
absolutely.
Especially when I've got Van in there.
I'm Raven Fist.
I don't have like a seasonal funny joke. I just had a thing running in my head when I was like, what's something funny I could say? I keep thinking of Jay-Z's line in Monster where he keeps saying goblins, ghouls, a zombie with no conscience.
That's us.
I just want to remind everyone.
Tag yourself.
Yeah, anytime somebody... Anytime somebody's like Jay-Z is an all-time rapper, I think of that line specifically, and not in a bad way. That's an incredible
line. I like that.
But he stood in front of a mic and said that one day, and that's very funny to me. He did the Monster Mash live on tape.
My Monster Mash.
Hey, calm down, listener. I know I can hear you screaming. You're so scared. Who are these terrifying hosts? And what horrifying podcast have you accidentally stumbled into? Well, this is a very special Halloween-y episode of Acts of the Blood God. That's right. This episode, we're going to be talking about phantasms, specters. We're talking our good old buddies. Ghosts, baby. That's right.
Zoinks.
It is our top, was it 15? Yeah.
Something yeah, I like think we'll, hopefully we'll get to 15.
Yeah, that's three times five.
We're going to get to
it. I did express concern we might not have enough ghosts, but I think we're okay. Crafty.
I've got some backups guys have brought some of the same picks. So
I've got some deeper cuts.
I have
cuts.
One that none of you chose, and it's one of my favorites. Great. So I'm excited about
this. I feel
this.
Confident that three, maybe four of mine have not been picked by anybody.
Okay.
So
I think this is going to be more diverse than you think, Eric. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, excellent. We're talking our top 15 RPG ghosts. As you know, last year we did our top 15... Oh, no. Well, is it top 20? Might have been top 20. Top 20.
Might have been top 20, yeah.
RPG vampires. So, look, it's a new era. We're starting a tradition of just naming things in lists, and I can't wait. It's going to be a great episode. But before that, got a little housekeeping. You're listening to Acts of the Blood. What did I say? Acts of the Blood Ghost? Sure.
Yeah.
It's an independent...
I mean, Blood God's already kind of spooky.
I know, that's the
thing! I think that's fine.
we've painted ourselves into a horrifying corner. This is Acts of the Blood Ghost, an independent RPG pod ghost. We can only operate because of your very generous support. If you'd like to support us, head on over to patreon.com/bloodgodpod, where you can get access to... Look, at the $1 level... You get access to our Discord. We have a wonderful community. It truly is my favorite place to be on the internet lately. With everything, you know. At the $5 level, you get ad-free versions of these episodes. Plus, you get access to our wonderful weekly newsletter written by Nadia Unalive,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. We have to censor ourselves because YouTube's idiotic.
Yes. Exactly. Okay, sorry about that. It's just funny to say unalive. I honestly don't care.
Unalive is pretty clever of this generation, I have to say. I like that. As someone who lived through the 90s and had to watch RPGs go through this nonsense where you couldn't say die, it's so stupid to see it all repeat again. Why is death so controversial? We all die, you dumbasses. Let's stop this. Let's be mature for a change.
Can we?
You can't let the kids get existential. Like, you can't let the kids learn about mortality.
Yeah. Yeah.
God forbid they might start.
Not until Artax and the quicksand.
Artax, no.
No Artax.
Swap some sadness.
$5 does all that. Another amount of money does something else.
$5 kills Artax.
Hell yeah. Now we're a podcast. No, I'm not going to kill Artax. I love Artax. Talks in the book. Did you know that? He says, "Oh well, leave me here to die. It's okay. You can go.
Wait,
you can go."
That's so much worse. That's awful.
It is.
He gets what's the he gets Cask of Amontillado in the quicksand.
He absolutely does.
But oh, that's terrible.
I totally recommend you read the Neverending Story book. It just stops halfway in the movie and kind of misses the whole point of like grief and recovering from grief. One of my favorite books of all time, hence my tattoo. Anyway,
I don't know. I can't trust the book because it ends.
I'm gonna kill myself. I'm gonna unalive myself.
What you can trust is that at the $10 level, you're gonna get access to things like the Pantheon of the Blood God, where we unequivocally and objectively decide what games are worth playing at all, or something.
Something like that. Remember how we used to have episodes when Kat would leave and it would just be like a joke fest, and now like the gas leak isn't getting stopped anytime soon, you know what I'm saying?
Our last Pantheon episode was wonderful. It was so much fun. We had Anthony John Agnello and Bob Mackey to talk with us about Mother 3. It's really fantastic. It's 2 hours of Mother 3 talk. Go check that out. Our upcoming Pantheon is inexplicably Mega Man Battle Network 2.
Yeah, who did that?
How did that happen?
I don't. The people voted.
Some people voted.
Now you know how I feel
when
people are like, "Why are we playing Sonic Chronicles?" I'm like, "Y'all did this."
Here's the thing, though.
I primed the pump, but y'all pulled the trigger, all right?
Mega Man Battle Network 2 is an excellent video game in many, many, many ways. And I'm really, really stoked to talk about it. So that's going to be a fun episode. That's coming up at the end of November.
Yes.
In the meantime, $10 also gets you access to our side quest episodes every other month. This month, we do have something coming up, and you better bet it's Halloween-themed.
Shit.
Eric muttering to the microphone.
Motherfucker.
And don't forget, we've got our, as well, including our 10th anniversary merch, which is just delightful, with designs by the lovely Nina Matsumoto. Hey,
I actually just bought a hoodie. It's great.
Oh, all right.
I love it.
Fantastic.
Perfect.
It's getting chilly out there.
It is getting chilly. It's a perfect in-between hoodie.
It's as they say, sweater weather.
It sure is.
Also, we like to give a shout out to one of our Star of Destiny patrons every week, and I bet we know which one that is this week.
Hey, who in the stars hasn't been shouted out yet? Popcorn time.
Let's while that's being figured out, let me just say
Anthrax Bees. Anthrax Bees.
Thank you.
We love ya.
Excuse me, Anthrax Boos.
Too
spoopy for me.
I'm more scared of bees because bees are real. Let's put it all out on the table. I'm on the road. I'm recording from a hotel. Eric just made a change,
a cross country move. Yeah, there's still boxes in piles behind me. This is not streaming live on Twitch like we normally do because one of my PCs exploded after the move. So we're still solving technical issues over here in the House of Van.
It is it is not scary because it's Halloween season. It's scary because we are all hanging on by a thread to dear life.
I
should have been on the ball, I admit, but also I'm very busy with playing like two games at once, and
two games at the same time.
Two games in a row?
How come Nadia gets two games?
Gee, Nadia, why did your mom let you have two games?
How come Nadia gets only two games? I have like six. I hate this.
Depends what I should be playing, what I want to be playing.
I sent one of my editors literally the image from the Twilight Zone of the guy with the glasses being like, no, it's not fair.
No, it's not fair.
I have time now. In the context of me wanting to play more Trails in the Sky first chapter, but then having to play a bunch of other stuff for coverage.
That's a great game. I'm glad you're playing it too, because I've been playing it. It's a
save it for another segment or something. Look, I run a tight ship, as you can tell, and we've got to talk about ghosts.
Ooh.
So here we go, gang. We're talking our top five RPG ghosts. Who wants to go first? Nadia, give us a ghost.
Okay. I'm going to pick one before all y'all pick her. I'm going for Vivian.
She's going to be
my first. Great pick.
God, I love Vivian. Even, like, first of all, I'm really glad they restored her trans identity. And I've just always thought she was a really cute ghost. I think she's adorable. I think her crush on Mario was adorable. I think she's also just a really neat character because she's so resilient while her sisters are being assholes to her. And she's also just an example of Nintendo's character design at its best, because, like, she's got half a face and she emotes so well. I am putting it in there for Vivian. Also extremely handy in battle with, like, she has fire magic, if I'm not mistaken. And she can, like, pull you underground during, like, after a charge attack. And when they unleash it, like, she can get you out of the fray. So Vivian, in her little Dr. Seuss hat, that's one of my favorites.
I was about to say, I love that she has the Cat in the Hat.
Got a little, that rules. Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
I adore her.
I've never played Thousand Year Door. I want to get around to it eventually because I love Paper Mario or, like, Mario RPG stuff in general.
Yeah.
But... No, Vivian has always been, like, one of my favorite characters from that series. I love all the little companion characters from Thousand Year Door, and she's such a cool character. And then, obviously, when the kerfuffle happened around the remaster, and I was looking into it, I was like, okay, well, what's going on here? I was like, oh, this is a really cool story. This is a really awesome character. So, no, absolutely, when we said, like, we're doing favorite ghosts or whatever, that was the one I looked at. I was like, she's going to be named within about 5 seconds of us starting to name ghosts.
I knew someone was going to, so I grabbed her.
I think she's number one for sure.
She absolutely rules. Like you say, her design is great. I feel like they were really firing on all cylinders when they were designing side characters like this in the 2000s. Is Madame Fleury is not a ghost. What is she?
She's a wind spirit. She's like an Ifrit or a
wind spirit.
Yeah. Or a shoot, there might have been
Madame Fleury. Is that the voluptuous spirit?
She's real round.
Yeah.
And huge. Now we're talking.
Yeah, Madame Fleury. She's like a wind spirit. She's like a force of nature, kind of a djinn. A djinn is probably the better term.
Oh, well, she kind of looks like a ghost.
I'll count her.
Vivian is a ghost.
Vivian, great pick. Love it. Absolutely putting Vivian up on the board. Eric, tell us a little bit about one of your ghosts.
I'm going to save one of the more obvious picks and maybe go for a less obvious pick here, and also potentially a controversial pick, depending on what you consider an RPG. We're just going to pull that Band-Aid off right now. I'm going to elect to choose the Hero's Shade from The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess.
Right. Oh, okay. I love him.
I think, like, Twilight Princess is obviously a game that I think a lot of people had very varying opinions of, because when it first came out, people were like, finally, the Dark Zelda I've waited for. Screwed Zelda. Y'all remember Zelda, by the way?
I was there.
Every time
Gandalf.
Every time people are like, oh, Wind Waker, it was, like, universally beloved. I was, no, it wasn't. I remember those. I was there when it happened. Like, people were saying Zelda when that came out. Anyways, so Twilight Princess initially was kind of the edgelordy thing, but I think as time has grown on, it has really become a game that I think about a lot. It's a really unique and interesting Zelda game that I've kind of wanted to revisit, if only Nintendo would give us a cause for revisiting. You know, someday that'd be great. But I love the hero shade. I think anytime that the Zelda series kind of plays with its, not only its internal timeline, but the idea of its characters as these beings that exist in these sorts of cycles and stuff like that, it gets really, really interesting. I love the Zelda games that do play with the idea of Zelda, Link, and Ganondorf as not just people, but as kind of recurring instances of themselves. And so having this hero shade that you learn from, that you are kind of guided by, but it's also like super creepy. And I don't know, I don't want to spoil other series in the process, but I think it's really interesting when a character kind of gets to be tutored by a future version of themselves that is also a haunting version of themselves, right? Like, this is what I could become when this is all over. Like, this is an end result of my decisions, and you know, this is what awaits me potentially
back in the,
and I think that's really cool and interesting.
Back in the olden days of US Gamer, I actually wrote a big article about the hero shade and the song that comes with it, which is the Song of Healing, which if you play Majora's Mask, like, it's a, first of all, it's a song I love. It's very kind of lonely feeling, like the rest of Majora's Mask, but it has like a bit of hope to it as well. And the question is, well, why did Nintendo choose this song to represent the hero shade? And the answer, as far as, you know, just the really popular fan theory, is that, you know, you have the split timeline idea, which I'm not going to get into, but you do have that timeline, apparently, where supposedly Link warned Zelda before Ganondorf could get up to his crap. He got imprisoned, executed, whatever. And so Link, who's still kind of this hero spirit in him, he can't really do anything with it. Like, obviously he had children because he calls you like his child, but what was he not able to pass his skills onto them for some reason, like right away? Like, was there some kind of, you know, just the fact that he wasn't fighting, but he yearns to fight. And that's actually very sad. It's a surprisingly deep character for a Nintendo game.
Yeah. Eric, you talking about seeing potentials of what you could be, what the hero could be in an RPG. I mean, you gotta play FF11 sometime.
I was broadly gesturing towards the Fate series, is what I will say.
Sure.
And then knowers will know.
Oh, I've never played that.
Fate Stay Night is a very good visual novel. It's a pretty good visual novel. I wouldn't say it's like one of the best, but it is important. Capital I important. Yeah. Oh, Chrono Cross has that? See, I need to get around to Chrono Cross.
Chrono Cross does have that.
Chrono Cross too, man.
Maybe
someday.
Maybe future
someday
stream.
Pantheon.
I'd love
stream.
To hear your opinion on Chrono
Cross. Oh, we've done.
Cross.
I thought we did Chrono Cross.
Weird ass game.
Did we?
I think we did a long time ago.
I want to been before my time.
Yeah, because Kat really hated the battle theme.
Ugh.
The battle theme's not great. But the rest of the soundtrack
the
is just
theme in my headphones
brilliant.
Real quick.
While you do that, Hero's Shade. Great pick.
Hero's
love
Shade.
It. Fantastic. I'm also going to be on the fringes of what we consider an RPG, but this was made in RPG Maker, so I think that qualifies. Back on the old PC-98, I'm talking about Corpse Party's Sachiko Shinozaki.
Yo, that's a good pick.
Corpse Party was that name just stirs controversy in me for some reason. Isn't that like someone had a head in a head in a bag? Or was that some other Yandere game?
I don't know. There's a lot of Yandere stuff from the 90s and early 2000s that could be.
Yeah. Go on. Sorry.
But Sachiko is she's our Sadako. She's our whatever the grudge girl's name is.
Oh.
Sadako.
Katako.
I don't know her name in the original one, but she's like Samara in
Samara in the English, and she's Sadako in
okay.
No, that's
Japanese.
The ring. That's the ring.
Oh, you okay. Yeah, ring versus
You're talking about the garage. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, she's our resident very sad, very angry girl ghost. This is some classic Yurei stuff. Japanese folklore.
Yo, there's a Yurei in that?
I mean, depending on which corpse party you're playing, this is a classic of the RPG, influential RPG maker games, right up there with your Yume Nikis. And it's just a straight up horror adventure game. Lots of different endings, lots of different ways, a lot of different people can die. I would love it to get in a pantheon if we do another RPG maker, or even next time we do a horror pantheon. I feel like it deserves to be in there because it is also very readily available in English. And there's a Corpse Party 2 coming out sometime next year.
Really?
Not the Corpse Party 2 that's been in development for like 15 years, but a different Corpse Party 2. Corpse Party's complicated. Mm-hmm. But yes, this is just classic, very scary girl, long black hair, in like a red dress, shows up to scare you.
Yeah.
And it's classic. It's classic stuff. Mm-hmm. Nadia. Ghost number 2.
So I admit I double dipped because there is another great ghost in Mario RPG Thousand Year Door that I could not decide between him and Vivian, but Duplis, who...
Oh,
Duplis.
I thought you were going to... Never mind. Continue.
So I don't want to spoil too much, but Duplis is just an asshole. He's a ghost who bars your way, and he says to you, okay, if you want to... want to pass, you got to guess my name. He turned everyone to pigs, and he's like, if you want me to turn them back, then guess my name. And his name is Duplis, but when he gives you the keyboard, the in-game keyboard to guess his name, you can't find the letter P because he stole it and put it somewhere. So your mission is to find the letter P so you can say his name. And while he's waiting, he's just kind of hanging.
This dude's just
chilling
hanging
on
out.
A rocking chair. He's got a party hat on. He looks like a
this is the
amazing
coolest
digital circus character.
Guy that's ever been in an RPG. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and
he rules.
He rules. He's absolutely great. Like I said, he looks like a digital circus character, and he's funny as hell. And I like characters who are just unapologetic assholes. Like, you know, you get Bowser, he's like, oh, I'm a bad guy, but oh, I also love my son. But Duplis is just like, I hate you, guess my name. Oh, you can't guess my name because I'm a troll? Too bad, go find the letter P. Go pee, take a pee. Oh, I love his little bow too. That's amazing. That's completely unnecessary
shoes.
But brilliant.
And
he's got shoes.
He's chilling in the rocking chair next to a little fridge with his like lamp and coffee table. Dude, this guy is rad. That's how I want to be,
hell.
Man. That's
his little red eyes, little tassel
just
on the
vibing.
The hat.
That is a great pick. And much like ghosts are otherworldly, he introduces a fourth wall breaking game mechanic. I feel like that's he's reaching across the veil to interrupt your gameplay session. I think that's brilliant. I love
it.
Fantastic pick. Eric, ghost number 2.
I'm gonna hit another of the most chillinest dudes ever to do it. Napstablook from Undertale.
Poor Napsta.
Just the most vibinest ghost you've ever met. Just wants to lay on the ground and listen to music.
Wants to lay on the ground and feel like garbage.
Out. Yeah, yeah. Has like some of my favorite early like battle mechanics in Undertale. It's just a sad ghost and you have to dodge his tears. And it's like I think most people when they play that game do kind of get the charm of it, but Napstablook is usually one of the first characters that people are like, I love this character.
Yeah.
I need to spend all my time with this character. Napstablook is so me coded, and that's because Napstablook is all of us in a way, you know?
I miss Napstablook.
Yeah, I love Napstablook. doesn't really need more elaboration than that. Just like the chillinest ghost you've ever seen.
I do love the music that plays when you lie on Nasa Bluke's floor and you just kind of chill out.
Yeah.
I just listen to that sometimes for me to calm down.
Yeah. Just a little melancholic ghost hanging out. God, I was looking up some Nasa Bluke art just now, and oh my God, there's such good art. I was just vibing on the ground with the headphones, hanging out.
Yeah.
He's very cute.
He's the best.
I definitely recognize him, but didn't know what role he played.
Have you not?
I'm glad he's...
Have you not played Undertale?
I haven't played Undertale.
Pantheon time.
It'll happen.
We've done an Undertale thing.
I think
it's already been done.
I've done a Pantheon for Undertale. Yeah. God damn, this show's been around too long. We're all old. Show's over. Good night.
I don't know if we've done... Well, I'm double checking.
I'll take my arthritis medication.
We have not done an Undertale Pantheon.
All right.
We also haven't updated our Pantheon list in a hot minute.
Yeah.
I think Radiant Historia was the last time we updated it, but yeah.
All right. Speaking of cute little dudes with cute little eyes that just look like they're having a great time, I got to bring a Pokemon in here. I cannot believe we haven't had a ghost-type Pokemon.
Well, we've been holding off on the obvious, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can't just go straight to...
Okay.
You know.
All right.
Who's to say? I was going to assume what I thought you were going to say, but I could be surprised here.
There's a lot of ghost-type Pokemon. I think
there
this is going to surprise you. We're talking about... Look, there is... I haven't even played this one, but there's a Pokemon in this game that is not only just an object that is dead, but this object also exhibits the classic Japanese philosophy of wabi-sabi. I'm talking about my little dude. I've been on a matcha kick lately. I love I love a matcha latte. We're talking Sinistra.
Oh, what a great pick.
Yeah.
So cute.
Is that the...
That's a little teapot,
is
right?
Is that the evolve form? That's not Spirit Tea, right? Is it the evolve form of Spirit Tea? Or...
I think it's Sinistra.
This is the evolved form.
Wait, what the
fuck? Okay, it's... Because there's...
Oh, Spirit Tea is a completely different thing. Never mind.
Oh, okay,
for some reason, I thought this was called Spirit Tea.
And so there's the teapot evolution line, and then there's a variant of it that is the matcha line.
Oh,
and
I love Pokemon so much.
It's infuriating because...
Poltergeist. That's what it was. Yeah.
So Poltergeist and... Or no. Is the whatever they did, they swapped the naming
Axe
conventions.
Of the Blood God loses cat
Buffering.
And fails to name
Buffering.
Pokemon.
I see the headlines today.
Whatever it is, the T one has two evolutions with a naming convention. Then the matcha one has two evolutions, but they switched the naming conventions around. Anyway. This guy, he's just
part.
A weird little dude with swirly eyes. He's chilling out in his little... He's muddling some matcha. And his little ceramic container is fractured. And in it is more matcha. Like, he's holding it together. Like, he's his own wabi-sabi. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so charming.
What's a wabi-sabi?
It's you know when
not much. What's wasabi?
Yeah. There we go. All right, episode over. that is, you know, when like a cup or some ceramics break, and then they go in and repair it, but they'll usually like fill it with the gold or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah,
and it's it's like just the art of repairing a thing and making it even more beautiful in its imperfection and its fractured little self.
Okay,
I identify
but you
with
can
you.
Do. You do that with a cup and it's art, but then I break my leg and try to fill it with gold and suddenly I'm a monster.
Yeah.
Suddenly I'm dying.
Would you can I ask a probing question here?
Yeah.
Would you drink a Pokemon?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, cool. Yeah, yes. I want to make sure we're all on the same board here.
Okay, I wouldn't drink the entire Pokemon. I would ask for a taste.
like you're in a room And it's you and the Pokemon. Yeah, yeah. And the Pokemon has consented.
Yes.
Has said, please sup of my body.
Yeah.
And no one else is around and no one will ever know.
Yeah.
Are we talking about...
Everyone's drinking that Pokemon.
Totally.
Poke transubstantiation? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is disgusting.
This is my matcha. Give it freely. Do this in remembrance of me. Yeah.
No, because that's more of a metaphor. This is like if I just walked up to Jesus and took a bite.
This is vor, is what it is. It's just consensual vor.
Finally, Pokemon... Christian Pokemon vor.
Finally.
It's about time.
Yeah, no, if it was me and my little matcha buddy on a desert island, I'd say, hey, man, I need to get my energy up. Can I just have a...
That's like one of those Looney Tune cartoons where, like, the characters are stranded on an island and one starts seeing the other's a turkey and starts chasing them around to try to eat them. Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, like, I'd eat Magikarp. Like, if somebody grilled
you
a Magikarp,
though.
I would
too,
eat that.
They're inedible. Their scales are like iron.
Well, you take the scales off.
But apparently there's nothing. It's kind of a bony, gross-ass fish. But Pidgeotto does eat it, so.
Yeah.
And yes, I would lick Vanillish.
Oh, yeah. That goes without saying. Yeah. It has a straw in it. Look at that.
Yes, right there for the supping.
If Arceus didn't want us to eat them, he wouldn't have made them so delicious.
He wouldn't have made them edible. He wouldn't have made Pokemon edible.
If he didn't want me to do this, he wouldn't have isekai'd me back to like the 4th century. You ever think about I was hoping that Legend Zaw was gonna pick up with that kid just getting isekai'd into a new timeline. Like Arceus is just screwing with this one kid, decided to take him out of time and put him in all these different places.
That's pretty mean, but funny.
Would I eat a Pokemon egg? Yeah, if I could crack that thing, make an omelet, I would absolutely do that. You think Chansey's not like running the best little diner on this side of Kanto? Like,
oh, absolutely.
That's, yeah.
You said that in the cadence of best little whorehouse, and all I could imagine was,
yeah,
like,
I did,
was Chansey as Dolly Parton singing with all her girls that are preparing their weird Pokemon eggs.
Chansey singing 9 to 5.
The way you make a living.
Nadia, give us pick number 3.
Yeah, this is 3. I'm going to contribute my own Pokemon in this case, which is Palisand, which is the sandcastle Pokemon that eats you. And here's why I love Palisand. Okay, so the idea is Palisand sits around, do-do-do-do-do. It's got a little shovel. And this might be its evolution I'm thinking of, I'm sorry. But either way, it's kind of the same line. It's got a little shovel sticking up out of it. And the idea is some idiot grabs that shovel and gets sucked into Palisand world and gets eaten. And their bones either get ground up or spit out, I forget. But it does mention the bones specifically. And the reason I love this so much is because, you know, it's one of those situations like, okay, here's the natural world, like a Pokemon adapting to the natural world to get its prey. And I just kind of like seeing that stuff. And as a kid, as I was saying earlier on the pre-show, I used to go to the beach a lot for vacation. And one of my favorite memories is like, you know, my parents and I would be walking down the beach around sunset and most people would be gone or be going home. You'd find a lot of toys and stuff left behind. So, I once found a really cool ice cream truck just sitting there. So, of course, there's always a million, you know, shovels left around. You just kind of run up around them and just, shovel a couple of things, maybe keep it, maybe you don't. But the idea that you could, as a child, grab this shovel and die... That's a really cool Pokemon. That is peak Pokemon design. That's what I love about Pokemon. This is a company that thinks about how their Pokemon, you know, live, eat, reproduce, whatever. They put all that work into that. And that's just like, how does this goddamn sandcastle survive? It has a shovel to fool people into grabbing it and then it eats them.
I like that there's just Pokemon that kill people.
And
the world is kind of accepted. We're like, well, that's the cost of living in a world filled with Pokemon. Leave a few of the murder Pokemon out and
about. Some Pokemon are your friends, and some Pokemon will treat you as food.
Yeah, I looked this up just to verify. And yes, the Pokedex entry says, from the hollows in its arms, it fires the bones of its victims, which are all dried up after
That's
being drained
awesome.
Of their vitality.
It's got a t-shirt cannon for arms where it launches the bones out.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Sandy Gast. Yeah, that's the initial, I think. But
what a
just a great Pokemon all around.
What a great pick. I love it. Good. Eric, what are the odds you've got a Pokemon for us that you'd like to draw?
I was gonna add a Pokemon to the list
while we're in the segment.
I do want to briefly shout out that this should be filled a spot by an Eevee type, but sadly we don't have a ghost type Eevee. So
get on it.
You know, regrettably, Poe, don't drink out of big cup. Poe is my favorite ghost cat. Just kidding, he's alive. For my ghost Pokemon, I was going to do Gengar. Full disclosure, because I was a Gen 1 kid, and Gengar and Haunter were always kind of my favorites. I love the episode of the anime where they fight Sabrina's Pokemon and they're dealing with Gengar, but there is a new contender for my heart, and the one I'm choosing is Mimikyu. I love Mimikyu.
Mm-hmm.
Mimikyu is like the cutest design that I think the Pokemon company has done in years, because it's just a sad little guy. Again, it's like Nasapluke. It's like a sad little guy, and he's wearing a Pikachu outfit. It's so good for Halloween. Like, oh, I just want to. Yeah. I'm a Pikachu. Yeah. Look at me. I'm just chilling.
Yeah.
It could be like haunting, I guess, but I don't know. That's like a really goofy bad Pikachu, and that's why it's adorable.
I love the lore that if you look at it, the actual form of Mimikyu, you will die of fright.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep yourself covered.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that it knows it's horrifying, so it's desperately looking for acceptance and love by dressing up as the one Pokemon it knows that everyone loves unequivocally. It's got some real it me for real energy. I think a lot of us can identify with Mimikyu.
Yes.
It also reminds me of, I'm going to put the picture in the Discord chat so people can see it, but there was the old tattoo that got famous on the internet because it was a really bad Pikachu, and then an artist did a cover-up of it. That was a really incredible, probably the best tattoo cover-up I've ever seen. That was just like, so it's a really bad Pikachu that had been done by their friend, and so the tattoo artist just made an art frame around it, made it look like Pikachu was painting it, so there's like a really good bottle. Pikachu painting it.
That's a great detail.
And he's like, it's what do you expect? I'm a Pikachu. Like, it's, I don't know why he's like Danny DeVito or like Joe Pesci.
It's a real fun inversion of what's the Norman Rockwell one of the guy who's painting himself but making himself look real handsome.
Mm-hmm. I look at that and I'm like, I would get that whole thing as an actual tattoo because it's kind of adorable.
It's got some Ace fantastic. From One Piece. He's got his tattoo on his arm. Mm. That's A, and then an S that's crossed out, and then a C and an E.
That's great, actually.
Which I think is just one of the best visual
gags. That's amazing.
Never commented upon in the entire series, and I think it's fantastic.
How deep into One Piece is that character? I ask because I have been debating getting back to my One Piece watching.
He's pretty early on, but that's all relative when you're talking about One Piece.
I think I was still at, was it Logtown? Logtown?
Oh yeah,
I think that's where Logtown. I was. Yeah. So very very early.
He should show up pretty soon, actually.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. I love it. Mimikyu. What a fantastic pick. So those are our three Pokemon picks. Are there any more Pokemon?
Do we want to call it on Pokemon after that? Do we want to just name some Pokemon but not have them be like part of the list? Because I mean, like Chandelure, great ghost Pokemon.
I'm happy to make an honorary list of Pokemon that could have easily been in
Dreepy.
Here.
Yeah.
Spectrier is a cool one. I like that one quite a bit. Is Gimmigool and Goldengo, I think, are both. I know Gimmigool is. I don't remember if Goldengo stays ghost type when he evolves, but those are very good. Yeah, Trevenant is a fun one. Basculegion, I think, is kind of cool.
Pumpkaboo. I love a Pumpkaboo.
Hoopa. I like Hoopa because in Pokemon Unite, the Pokemon MOBA, Hoopa can do some really messed up stuff.
Like
so you'd be in lane and you'd be like, oh my god, he's going Hoopa. He's doing a Hoopa.
The meme, it's happening, except it's Hoopening and it's the Hoopa doing the arms instead of Ron Paul.
I don't care for Hoopa. I think Hoopa's design is weird. I've never liked Hoopa. I'm sorry for all the Hoopa heads out there.
He just looks so
Lucille
jolly.
Bluth. I don't care for Hoopa.
Yeah.
The one that's a coffin is kind of sick too.
Oh, that thing's nasty.
Cofagrigus.
Is that how you say that? I would have said Cofagrigus, but I don't think that's right.
Cofagrigus.
Oh, Skeledirge is a ghost type. I didn't know that.
That was my Pokemon
for that gen.
Right, right. I like a Froslass. Even in the Chandelure line, I think all three of them are great. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Is Klefki? He's fairy.
The Typhlosion that was in Arceus was also a ghost type, right?
Oh yeah.
Had the spirit flames around
that
it
was
and
cool.
stuff.
Yeah,
that was pretty sick.
Rotom, I like a lot.
Is Rotom a ghost
electric
type? Mm-hmm. I guess he would be.
He's electric ghost.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then he becomes electric and whatever type he's turned into.
Man.
Also, shout out to Galarian Corsola.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
That is a bleached coral that is dead.
Oh, yeah.
Because
we're killing the coral reefs.
Good old Pokemon. Game for kids.
Yeah.
Pokemon is like one of the better types of Pokemon.
I don't know if that's controversial.
I don't think so. But
I think if you don't know how to handle a ghost type, it can trip you up a bit.
Well, not even just gameplay wise. I just think like design wise, I've always liked the ghost Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
They always had the coolest towns, the coolest gym leaders. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone had an awakening with Sabrina, as I understand it. Was Sabrina the ghost type? Yeah.
Sabrina was the ghost type. I liked Phoebe in Ruby and Sapphire. I liked, Alistair in
Sword
and Shield with the mask.
I love Dreepy and the evolution.
It was fun.
Such a great design. Look at that ridiculous thing. Dreepy's a little Chinese ghost that like does this thing, and it's got like little, like, you can see it on top of the one that's a fighter plane. I can't remember his name.
Justice in the chat has posted what looks like the aircraft carrier of Pokemon.
It is. That's him. I love him. He's got a little Dreepy on top of him, and the Dreepy is so cute.
What makes him Chinese?
No. Like, the Dreepy has a ghost. Like, he does, like, the little, like, you know, Asian Chinese, like, ghost thing where, like, you know, he's just kind of hanging his head. His arms.
Oh, with, like, this. Are you talking about with, like, when they have the long sleeves and stuff?
Yeah. I thought that was a Chinese thing.
I don't.
There he is.
That's
what he looks like. He's got a little spike on his tail. I just noticed that for the first time.
Oh, yeah. That's cute.
I love him.
I just like that he's got like the aircraft carrier head that's got like a little Pokemon.
Isn't that great?
So it can like take off and strike.
Yeah. Sword and Shield. Everyone, most underrated, if you ask me. What a great game. I loved it.
All right. Enough of these cute Pokemon. Let's get scary. Actually, no. You know what? My next pick.
Never mind.
We're going to get Canadian.
Hell yeah.
Oh, that's the same thing to me. Yeah.
Canonically hailing from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Fuck yeah.
I'm talking about Xenosaga's Nephilim.
I'm
sorry, Toronto? I don't know anything about Xenosaga, really.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah, both Toronto and Jesus exist in Xenosaga.
Yeah, two things that we know are mythological.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Damn, I wish Toronto was real.
Peace out. I'm gone. I'm a ghost.
Nephilim, this is the ghost girl that appears throughout the series. She was the daughter of a scientist who... I don't know if you've played the Future Redeemed arc in
I haven't yet. No,
I want to.
Okay,
is that how they tie it to Xenosaga? Is Future Redeemed?
It is how they tie it to Xenosaga.
That's crazy.
You get a tiny tiny little teaser of the. It's a radio that has the Vector Industries logo on it, and Vector Industries is, of course, the company that Shion works for in Xenosaga.
Bought EA. Excuse me.
pretty good. Speaking of Canadian studios about to collapse. But yes, they are also the company that made Cosmos. Canonically, Vector Industries operated out of Toronto back in the era of Lost Jerusalem, which is the before times.
What the fuck?
Nadia, you gotta play Xenosaga.
Okay, I have a question.
They need to put a collection out. There needs to be a compilation at this point.
Does Takahashi like Toronto? I mean, that's great if so, but like, maybe he liked how it must sound nice in Japanese. It must sound like Toronto. That's a really satisfying Toronto.
I mean, let's not undersell Toronto.
I don't want to understand. Well, if you're in Canada, yeah, everyone undersells Toronto and tells you suck. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's your opinion, but
Toronto's
a good city,
industrial and cultural center of North America, and I think it deserves its due. So,
thank you, Victor. That's nice of you to say.
Yeah. It's also got okay transit. As we discussed in our Retronauts episode,
someday
all about trains.
The Eglinton LRT will awaken.
Someday.
It's totally this year.
Hopefully before the end of the era of Lost Jerusalem.
that brings on the era of Lost Jerusalem. The Eglinton LRT finally gets finished. The prophecy.
Anyway, Nephilim. Creepy ghost girl who looks like Ellie from Xenogears, who is sort of guiding / haunting our main character as she progresses through the three chapters. Great character. I won't go too far into what her whole deal is, but just adding another kind of spooky girl to the list. I love Nephilim. I love those games. And I love Toronto.
Hell yeah. Toronto loves you, Victor.
Who we got next? Nadia, are we on your fourth?
This is my fourth. Here's one that you probably didn't see coming. I am going for the ghost from the Phantom Train in Final Fantasy VI who helps you just because he's a bro. And
yeah,
such a great idea. Like, when you enter the Phantom Train area, you've got yourself, you've got Sabin, you've got Cyan, you might have Shadow, he might F off, you don't know at that point. And you could have the option of talking to this ghost, and they can't really talk, but your party members say, oh, I think he wants to come with us. And if he does, like, he's another quote-unquote body to fill the spot so that maybe the monsters will beat up on him instead of you, because there's some powerful monsters in the train. But he also has the ability to one-kill with the possess feature, and that can be pretty handy sometimes. And if you do and just kind of order him to unalive himself again to possess an enemy, you do have a chance
to realize himself.
I don't even know.
Really.
Like, this is like the square root of fuck all. You can pick up another friendly ghost, but it's a bit of a risk because there's a bunch of ghosts milling about the ghost train, and most of them, if you talk to, are enemies, and they will attack you. But once in a while, you will find one who will go with you, and there's a ghost shopkeeper in the Phantom Train who's kind of milling amongst all the hostile ghosts, so he gets a shout out too. But I just wanted to give some applause to question mark, because that's all you get for his name, a row of question marks, as I recall.
The ghost shopkeeper, aka the ghost of capitalism.
Howdy, y'all.
It's still alive this train.
This is the train to hell, so you know I'm going to be on it.
Is this a safe space? Can I say that Shadow sucks and I hate Shadow? Now that I've completed about 90% of Final Fantasy VI, Shadow sucks.
Break my heart.
I don't care if he's got a story revelation.
He does. He has a great story revelation. He's like one of my favorite story
His
revelations.
His dog rules. Interceptor is cool as hell.
You want to know where he got Interceptor? You got it Lost of Dreams.
Yeah.
Shadow is a pick me. Like, Shadow is like, aww, oh, you know, you're gonna have to give me money, and then he ends up having like the worst kit in the game. I'm sorry, like, he's not useful.
Shadow is upfront about what his whole deal is, and it is your fault if you didn't read the fine print.
I feed my dog. One of the funniest bugs that exists in any video game is the Shadow empty party bug, where you can journey with Shadow technically on his own, and then at one point when he finally gets enough gold, he's like, I'm out of here, see ya, and he leaves and the game crashes and the music
rules.
The battle music plays on like an asshole, just da 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 da, and you can't do anything because the game has crashed. Shadow is gone, nobody's rescuing shit. It's fantastic.
It's a good video game.
It's a great
Not
video game.
People are saying it, you know.
No, it's really underrated. No one's heard of it.
I liked when they gave Shadow his own game and he killed Robotnik in it. All right.
Yeah.
Eric, what is your fourth pick?
I'm going to keep with the I guess, story spoilers theme. You have about 5 seconds to mute your feed and jump forward about 10 minutes if you don't want Final Fantasy X spoilers.
Yeah, here we go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So does Ject count as a ghost?
Yeah.
Okay, then there's Ject. I mean, I had a few different options. I had Ject, I had Orin, I had Seymour, who is kind of a ghost.
You had Tidus.
Like Tidus is fun, but not like the funniest ghost. Like, I think the funniest ghost is probably because like half the cast of that game is technically a ghost, and that is also awesome and very thematic. But I think the funniest ghost is probably either Seymour, or Seymour's dad, who's like, I got owned by my son. Or it's Ject, who's just a giant ghost that's rampaging across Spira.
I think Ject is a very, very, very good pick.
I think Ject.
Oh, Unalesca is also a good ghost. There's so many ghosts in that game. it's almost like ghosts. That's the point. Ject is great. I mean, I love the idea of haunting not necessarily being like scaring someone, but like haunting being like you're locked to a place, and the sentiments and the feelings around it. I think Ject really embodies that super well. This feeling of constantly like longing for what he used to have and maybe like learning about himself in the process. And like literally probably one of my favorite scenes in Final Fantasy X is when you leave Xanarkand, the actual ruins, after fighting Unalesca, and you walk outside and it's got like, when you go in, it has that excellent fixed camera angle. We don't do fixed camera angles anymore, man. I'm gonna like get on this again,
bring it back.
We have destroyed video game cameras with this behind the shoulder bullshit. All right. Like, we used to be a society.
Yeah.
We used to have fixed camera angles that had a little bit of cinematic verve to them. You know what I'm saying? And literally, like, Final Fantasy X has incredible moments with its fixed camera angles. And so you have this, you kind of run into this ruins to go do the whole dungeon. And you do all the stuff in there, and it's when you're running in, it's a very fixed angle where you see how big the ruins are as you were running into them, and you come back out, you still have control for a while, but the camera slowly pans over and you just see Sin there, just standing there, just like lingering. And it's such a moment of like, oh crap. And it's maybe one of my favorite moments in games because it feels so organic, feels so natural. And then obviously it goes into a cutscene, and that's kind of how like the end game starts. But I think Sin as this wandering ghost of all that came before it is so good, and embodying Xanarkand as well through it is so good. So checked.
Fantastic pick. I knew I could leave that up to you.
it was tough to pick between that and Orin and Seymour and all that, but no, I love Ject.
Yeah. Love it. All right. My fourth pick. Well, you know what? The only thing I like more than a handsome swashbuckling pirate is a handsome swashbuckling ghost pirate who happens to captain a ghost ship, because as we all know, ghost ships are the best trope in RPGs, in video games, anything. Love a ghost ship.
Love a ghost ship dungeon. So good.
Love me a ghost ship.
Always the best. So I'm gonna introduce a character that I think, if this game had the audience that it deserves, this character and the female character he gets shipped with would be a pairing that would resound across the fandom. I'm talking about Luzoff from Final Fantasy XI, Treasures of Ottergon. This is... He is how you are introduced to the Corsair class, which is...
I don't know enough about 11 to say that that's not the real name of an expansion, and that's the crazy thing, is you could have made that name up, and I... Hook, line, and sinker. Treasures of Ottergon. Yeah, sure. Yeah. That sounds right.
That sounds real. This was in an era before they did that. The best SEO for a Final Fantasy expansion was to just make a portmanteau of two words and cram them together.
Yeah. Something, something.
Thing,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. Yeah, thing, thing.
Thing, thing.
Ottergon. Final Fantasy XI. Yeah, Ottergon.
Yeah. We could have been a society. I mean, Wings of the Goddess. Rhapsodies of Vanadil.
That's a good one. I like that one a lot.
Chains of Promathia. Yeah. We had...
That one I know.
We had expansions with names.
I never even considered that was SEO, and you're right.
I don't
right,
even blame Final Fantasy for this. I kind of blame World of Warcraft for this, because I feel like World of Warcraft was doing that for a while, and even still for a little bit did, but then started to get into, like, Cataclysm. Ragnarok, but, like, there's another one that's, like, mononym, like a single name.
Yeah.
And you do kind of need that because of character counts and SEO, and because the internet has ruined the way that we ingest media and content. But I know I'm with you on, like, Rhapsodies of Vanadil. Like, that's a sick name. That's cool as hell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shadowlands, Dragonflight. We used to be Wrath of the Lich King. Come on.
That's
a good name.
That is
tells
good.
Me what's going on.
The Frozen Dragon Throne Flight. Was
Get
also a
here.
Sick name. God.
Anyway.
Used to be a society.
Look, Luzoth. Luzoth is a handsome Elvon man. He's got great hair. He's got a great outfit. He's a corsair. He's a ghost pirate. Little backstory, without spoiling anything. He was the prince of a neighboring nation that was conquered by the Empire. His ship was shot down by their military, and he was so full of hate and fury to take revenge on the Empire that Odin himself emerged and said, "All right, if you want to get your revenge, you can't. I'll let you go back up there, but once means you have to take on the mantle of Odin." This is classic Pirates of the Caribbean.
I was about to say, that sounds like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, man. This is my jam. I love this stuff. And would you know it? Over the course of seeking revenge on the Empire, he comes across the Empress herself and maybe develops a little bit of a crush and decides that perhaps vengeance isn't the only way forward.
Ew. Perhaps.
I love this expansion. I love this couple. I love all the lore surrounding them. Luzoth is maybe one of my favorite Final Fantasy characters that isn't a hottie. A lady hottie. You know, I like lady hotties, but this is my guy.
Someone that's not Athena.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
Me in sixth grade. I like lady hotties.
Yeah. Go check out
typing
some,
it into Google.
Go check out some Valentine's Day special episodes of Charlie and Dropouts for more insight.
Google, show me the lady hotties.
Luzoth. He rules. Nadia?
My last one?
Pick number 5. Let's do this.
This is kind of related, but I am going to give a shout out to my very sad wife, Etta Pureheart, from Final Fantasy XIV. I love this character for so many fucking reasons. Okay, so you meet Etta Pureheart pretty early in your adventure, and I think she starts off as a cautionary tale for new adventurers. Like, you're pointed out, someone points out, oh, look at this party, they're going to fall apart in a minute, and you have this party that's arguing with each other. Etta is a healer, but she's very, like, she doesn't really know her. She's very new at her job, and her fiance, who's a fucking asshole, is a tank, pulls too fast, pulls too hard. So she can't heal anyone, and everyone's dying. The DPS is this elven girl who's a real bitch, and it's kind of implied that she's sleeping with Etta's fiance. And then there's just Dalala. He's all right.
He was I don't believe he ever was her fiance, right?
Because he lost the ring. He lost the ring because this story is just terrible.
And also, he's a real dick to her. Like he's
terrible
to her.
No, he's terrible. But she's like, oh, I must. You know, we're in love. We've been together since we were 16 years old. It's the story.
Yeah,
and Etta kind of starts off as like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm doing my best. Please, I'm doing my best heals. And you kind of feel bad for her. But then the whole conversation takes a twist when everyone's like, go away. We don't like you as our healer anymore. And by the way, stop carrying around your dead husband's head. And that's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And you find out Etta's carrying around her dead husband's head who died because she couldn't. She couldn't heal him, could she?
Well, fiance, like, because it's important that they're not married yet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Very
sorry.
Important that they're not married.
Yes. Okay. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I love Ari Aster's Final Fantasy 14. Man, it's so good.
But
yeah, go for it.
She just kind of serves as a cautionary tale for the hero of of light, a warrior of light rather, and
don't pull wall to wall.
And it's a good lesson, right?
Speak for yourself.
Well, I mean,
listen to your healers is the proactive advice.
Yeah. Don't pull at a stupid pace unless your healer says so. That's the lesson here. But yeah, I like that she eventually becomes a major character, and there's actually instances, you look this on YouTube, of her haunting major towns. Like, someone put up a video of themselves talking to a Lala from that Lala guy from her quest, and she's just kind of leering in the background. You can barely see her, and apparently it's just so rare, and she's kind of standing there with her head down, that classic, like, you know, Japanese ghost. It's kind of terrifying. Yeah. I love Etta Pureheart. I love Etta Black Bosom.
Yeah, we didn't even get into the point where she becomes a ghost, because then way later on in tons of main story progress, eventually her old traveling companions get letters in the mail inviting them to her wedding.
Yeah. And like, wait a minute, he was dead.
Eventually you do have to encounter her again because she's trying to do a ritual where she brings him back. She's obviously gone completely crazy. She has enthralled her Elizan ranger friend. And yes, our Lalafell is the only one who actually makes it out of there alive. But then, going through the deep dungeon, the Palace of the Dead, she becomes a major antagonist in there, where she's taken on the name Etta Blackbosom, and it's fantastic. And yes, there are a handful of points around the map where she can just sort of randomly spawn and appear for a moment, and I love it. Eric, your pick number 5.
We are once again entering a spoiler zone, so if you don't want to hear spoilers about Dragon Age Inquisition, please, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. My fifth choice, and you might not even know that this is a thing, but I have to do it because it's one of the cooler ways in which I think BioWare found a way to link the stories of past Dragon Ages, because Dragon Age, much like Mass Effect, is all about story carries across, and choices that you make in previous games will affect future games. It doesn't always do that super well, but Dragon Age does try. And one of the cooler ways in which they did that is in Dragon Age Origins, there is a companion you have named Leliana. Leliana is a sister of the Chantry who can roll around with you and is basically kind of like a bard assassin and is super awesome. But when you do a certain mission, you can have her turn on you if you choose to corrupt a relic of Andraste, and you kill her. You just kill her, and she's dead. But Leliana is a major advisor in Dragon Age Inquisition, is like a story character that has to be there. So the way they invented it was that in Inquisition, if you killed her in Origins, she's a ghost. She's a ghost advisor. And you literally don't find this out until the end of the game, the epilogue, where it's talking about, you know, they do the whole where did they go after this stuff. And it's like, oh, Leliana just kind of faded into history. And there's like a really ominous tone to it. And it's like, yeah, no, she was like a ghost of Andraste that was just kind of there. And it's... in some ways it's kind of goofy because that's like, okay, so you just wanted this character that, like, honestly, very few people probably ever took that route of corrupting Andraste. I think whatever the thing is that you could corrupt in Origins, doing that and having Leliana there and then not having the rapport with her to not have her turn, it's honestly a pretty rare outcome. But they accounted for it and ended up creating this really ominous, scary ghost story in the process where you're like, wait, this whole time I've been collaborating with a ghost.
Large Marge kind of thing.
Yeah. It's really cool. And I think that's like a really interesting way that BioWare found to navigate around that particular narrative hurdle. And so I wanted to shout that out for the ghosts.
Did you just call it that's a large cool. Marge kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a large Marge kind of thing.
Rules. Hell yeah. Yeah.
She looked just like this.
Yeah, so Leliana in Dragon Age Origins / Inquisition.
I love that.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I have another one that I would have said, but I will hold off to hear what your last one is, although I don't think it's going to be what I'm going to say. So
probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do an honorable mentions after. Yeah, I like this one a lot. I feel like, the only other way you kind of could have done that is take the old Fire Emblem route where like, your one archer has died, but that is another archer character to show up and ask to be recruited into your team, you know? Who fills basically the exact same role, but... yeah, interesting. That's cool. I like
that. Yeah, she is a Lyrium ghost, is the official. And also, she can become the Pope.
All right.
So the Pope can be a Lyrium ghost, which is kind of awesome.
So you can have a ghost Pope?
Yeah, you can have a ghost Pope.
Ah, that rocks. I mean, talk about Final Fantasy X. Yeah, man.
Yeah, there you are.
I love that. I like that pick a lot. All right. Well... I did have Etta Blackbosom on here as one of my picks.
I'm
going to carry on in that tradition. Look, we've just had two ladies who it is revealed are ghosts in sort of a little twist. So I'm going to go back to the world of Pocket Monsters. But I'm not going to be addressing a pocket monster itself. I'm talking about the Ghost Girl. This is a... not even one character, but it is a recurring motif in Pokemon games since, I want to say, Gen 4, I believe. The first encounter with her is in the old chateau. Where you walk into a room, and of course it's a top-down map, so you can see the adjacent rooms from the player point of view, but you can't necessarily, your character wouldn't be able to see, but you can see that in one of the adjacent rooms is the sprite of a young female NPC. If you walk over to that room, however, there's no one there.
Ooh.
This comes back in a bigger way in Black and White. There is a ghost girl who can appear on one of the major bridges. You can actually do a little side quest that reveals sort of what her entire deal was. I believe she might have fallen off the bridge or something. It was sad. They're all very sad. Sun and Moon has a really good one. There's even one that I think is locked to the demo. That you can only get. there's a woman who is waiting for the fairy to arrive, but She says, like, I can't wait for the boat to get here. I want to see my mom and dad again. And I think you have to actually wait 20 days or something like that. There is a, like, real-time clock element to it. And she says, like, will you come back here to see me off in however many days? And you do that, and she thanks you. And then as she's walking towards the platform to exit, another NPC passes in front of her, and she's gone.
Sick.
There's another one in Sword and Shield that is a classic, like, you get a request from a little girl NPC, and she says, hey, can you take this letter to my friend in the other town? And you get there, you notice that the letter is worn and tattered. You get there, and you find that the person that it's delivered to is an old man, and he says, wait, what do you mean? Who is this from? It couldn't be. He asks you, like, how she's doing, because she must be old now too, and you can say, oh, she's doing fine, and he says, oh, that's nice to hear. And then if you go back, she's gone, and you get, like, a spell tag or one of those, like, ghost related items.
That's nice. I like that.
The thing I like about these ghost girls in Pokemon is that they are often unresolved, they are often randomized, and they are often gruesome. They are usually about something really, really tragic. I love it. It's one of those things that I think Pokemon does really well, and it's one of those little secret things that's off in a corner usually, and it's kind of one of those, like, did I imagine that kind of things. Even in the X and Y one, it's an NPC who just sort of walks past you, and then if you go look to where she would be, there's no one there. It's great. It's great stuff. I love the Pokemon Ghost Girls.
Honorable mentions. Do you want to just popcorn these around a little bit?
Let's do it.
I have two.
Yeah.
My first, Torrent from Elden Ring, who is a ghost horse.
Good old Torrent.
Yay, Torrent.
Ghost horse.
Yeah. And then also, to lean into an aspect that we didn't really get into, talk about the ghost in the shell, talking about Alt Cunningham from Cyberpunk 2077, who is basically, I feel like this might be light spoiler. It's not really. It's kind of existing beyond the firewall of Cyberpunk as a consciousness within the greater internet that has expanded out and consumed the wide world of Cyberpunk, and she's a really, really cool character and kind of embodies that sort of, like, what if Ghost was Cyberpunk, and does it really, really well. So shout outs to Alt Cunningham. Nadia, honorable mentions.
I'm going to give it to the ghost from Link's Awakening who follows you and just makes that really sad sound and just kind of makes those, like, talks in that really disjointed way. Like, he wants to go back to his house, and you take him there, and he looks around. He just says in, like, all caps with, like, ellipses, memories, so sad. And he has a very sad, disturbed face on him. He just looks like a miserable ghost, and he doesn't really change his face even when you finish the quest, but you do get the chance, you do get the impression that you gave him some peace. So, and he makes a really haunting sound when he follows you. Like, you're kind of doing your own thing in Zelda Link's Awakening, and all of a sudden you hear this weird ass sound, like a siren, and this ghost is following you, and you're like, what the fuck do I do with this thing? And it will tell you, take me here, take me there, and it's all, like, memories from his past life, and finally you take him home, and he's like, I can rest. And it's just, like, a really cute little sub quest that has nothing to do with much of anything, but I think he gives you something for it. But it's just sad, and I still remember it to this day. I appreciate that ghost.
In the same vein, Eric, I really wanted to find some picks for digital ghosts.
Digimon.
I think that's very, very, very fun.
Johnny Silverhand.
There were a lot.
There. Wake the fuck up, samurai.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, you're right.
There were a lot of picks I had that were from outside the RPG sphere. But one that I did find that I really wanted to make sure we got to is Aura from Dot Hack. She is also presented in a ghostly way, but is very much a digital spirit, and is a sort of amalgamation of AI and human personality that makes her a really compelling character, and is sort of the crux of the quadrilogy arc. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think it's great. I love her design. She's very weird, very spooky. Dot Hack is full of a lot of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I would even say, you know, we're playing Mega Man Battle Network 2 right now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about who Mega Man is.
Oh God.
Nadia. Mm.
Who is Mega Man? This is I don't even know if this counts as a spoiler. It's just so weird. Okay.
It's a spoiler for a 15-hour long game that is 20 years old.
Okay.
If you want to avoid spoilers for Mega Man Battle Network 1, skip ahead 5 minutes.
I'll keep this very succinct. Mega Man in the Battle Network series is a dead baby. And what happened was... Eric nodding his head. Yep. The tracks for this era. Dead baby hero. Yep.
Death Stranding too, huh?
Oh my God. Who copied who? No.
They're making Mega Men.
What happened was basically the hero of Battle Network, Lan, when he had an identical twin brother named Hub. In Japan he was named Saito, which is far better, but Hub got sick with a kind of a heart disease and died. And since they were identical twins, like the father could use the DNA to make a copy of the baby that was digital, blah, 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 blah. Basically, he gave him a robot brother and they grew up together. And I think the heart disease, like it's issued, it's acknowledged again in the third game because you save a kid who has it. But
yeah,
Mega Man is a dead baby. And actually that comes into play quite a bit at the very end of the series. Actually really sad. I actually once saw a doujin, is it doujin or doujinshi? I think doujinshi is probably plural. But anyway, I saw a doujin with that sequence happening where like the father saves the baby who dies, and actually is really good. It's a kind of a sad backstory. Very different for Mega Man and RPGs at the time, but this was the game that predicted that everything appliances would be online, and we all said that's stupid. Who would do that? Now I can
you imagine
tweet from
a
my
world
fridge.
Where your fridge has a soul?
God.
And there's also stuff like Skullman EXE and there's mm-hmm. there's some mm-hmm. other like good ghostly navvies in that game that I enjoy
there
a lot.
Is.
I've always loved, it was a very Ghost in the Shell thing where they talk about their ghost as their soul kind of, and it's the mm-hmm. thing that kind of like maintains consciousness across stuff. And watch Ghost in the Shell. Everyone should watch Ghost in the Shell. Incredibly, not the Scarlett Johansson one. If you do that, we will find you.
Hey, watch it to
you
compare
will never sleep
and contrast.
Again.
You never know.
That's true. You might like it.
Yeah.
No.
I'm trying to be positive.
Oh, and
it's like watching
SpongeBob.
It's like watching the live action How to Train Your Dragon. Like, why are you watching a worse version of something on purpose? That's if you're trapped on an airplane and the only movie is the live action Ghost in the Shell, then I like forgive you. But if you have an active choice in the matter, if you have agency and you choose this, then that's your own fault.
You don't have a gun to your head.
Watch Ghost in the Shell, but make sure it's not the version 2.0 one that replaced the immaculately hand animated opening with a bad late 90s CGI.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Definitely also watch Ghost in the Shell 2 Innocence. It's also very, very, very good.
And the TV series Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex.
Go for it. Yeah.
Oh,
and also read the original manga by
it's in a box over there somewhere.
Masamune Shirow. Fantastic stuff. And then even go look at the instruction booklet for Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon on the DS, because it has Fire Emblem art by Masamune Shirow.
Oh,
I didn't
really?
Know that. That's crazy.
Despite it not having his art in game.
Interesting.
That would have been a slightly better game if it had that armor.
The biggest complaint about Shadow Dragon is that it's kind of ugly compared to the GBA games.
Kind of one of the ugliest games I've ever seen.
Yeah, which is too bad because it's a good game.
It's not a bad game.
All right. Well, there's our ghosts for this year. That's we've got. My picks were Sachiko Shinozaki from Corpse Party, Sinistra from Pokemon, Luzoff from Final Fantasy XI, Treasures of Ottergon, Nephilim from Xenosaga, and the Ghost Girl from Pokemon. Nadia's picks were Vivian from Paper Mario, Duplis, also from Paper Mario, Palossand from Pocket Monsters, the question mark ghost on the Phantom Train from Final Fantasy, and Edda Pureheart / Edda Blackbosom from FF14. Eric's picks, The Hero's Shade from Zelda, Napstablook from Undertale, Mimikyu from Pocket Monsters, Jekt from Final Fantasy X, and Liliana from Dragon Age. This is a fantastic list.
It's a good list.
I think we did a good job. We didn't have too much crossover.
No, I think we covered all. There's cute ghosts. There's scary ghosts. There's plot twist ghosts. There's funny ghosts. There's chill ghosts. All kinds of ghosts.
All shapes and sizes. Good pick.
That concludes our ghost picks. Now it's time for a series of random encounters. Heart Machine has announced layoffs at the studio, citing shifts in funding and corporate consolidation. Their upcoming search action game, Possessors, will still launch November 11th on Steam and PS5. And Hyper Light Breaker will still release next year, but with a skeleton crew wrapping up development over the next few months. This is a bit of a bummer.
That's sad. That is really sad. Yeah. As someone who really likes Heart Machine, I remember playing Hyper Light Drifter for the first time and just being really surprised. Wow, this is a great game.
Yeah. I love this.
I wasn't huge on Breakers, but Possessors, I heard everyone who'd been playing it was really, really into it. So,
yeah.
I hope it does well.
Did either of you play, what was it, Solar Ash?
No,
but it was one that always really, like, their style stuck out to me. It looked really cool.
That was their game from a few years ago now. But it's all about, like, it feels like the best parts of an old or an early 3D Sonic game. You know, like it just momentum, and there's grinding, and your dashes feel impactful, and you're just moving around these spaces that are designed for that kind of movement. It feels great. I love it. I had a really good time with that.
That sounds fun.
Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9 are finally getting physical Switch releases in the West. Doesn't matter to me because I imported the Southeast Asian versions a million years ago, but you can finally just buy physical copies of those games. It's been years, but that's happening. Clair Obscur Expedition 33 is getting a free update with new dungeons, enemies, bosses, and costumes. What kind of costumes are in here? What kind of fun are we having over in Expedition?
They didn't really elaborate. I think they confirmed the free update a while back, and now they're kind of saying it's on the way. There's some stuff coming. I'm excited for that. I think there was also a tease that they're already at Sandfall, they're starting to work on their next project and kind of trying to keep the same scope and everything. So I think that's also pretty exciting because I think this is a team that had some really cool ideas about the kind of game they wanted to make and especially about the scope they wanted to do it at. And I want to see them continue. You know, we talk a lot about the Larians and stuff like that. The studios that just kind of build up over time doing what they love to do. And I would love to see Sandfall join that legion of kind of these studios.
Blue Protocol Star Resonance is finally out, though early reviews don't seem too positive.
Yeah, reviews are not strong. There's some weird gacha stuff in it, but I think a lot of it is just that people are just not vibing with it. This is not Blue Protocol, but it's also not the Blue Protocol that got canceled a while back that never came to the West. This was my understanding is they basically fire sailed the Blue Protocol license out, and a different company is now putting this out. So yeah, it's kind of a mess, and it seems like it was just kind of turned over to be like, well, someone can still maybe make money off of this, but has not had the strongest impact. So yeah.
Oh, a new report from Gamefile says Ubisoft canceled development on an Assassin's Creed game set in post-Civil War America last year due to political concerns. This is a real bummer. This
is not surprising, but yeah.
Yeah.
So it says it was, this is all a report from Gamefile said. So although grain of salt, but also like a place that we trust enough to at least report on what they're reporting. But can you imagine doing that and then seeing Sinners come out and the way that people fell in love with Sinners?
Yeah, man.
And being like, man,
this was
that
literally
was a stupid thing that we did. Yeah.
was literally going to be an Assassin's Creed about taking out the Klan. We could have had that. Oh, we could have had that.
That would have been sick.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
I want to stab a Klansman and put him in a hay bale. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, though, hey, those assassins got to be careful with those white hoods. You can get mixed up. Careful.
Hey.
Careful, guys.
Hey.
Oh, true. Yeah, yeah, true.
Mina the Hollower has been given an indefinite but not major delay away from its previously set October 31st release date for some final polishing and balancing. I think this is one we're all looking forward to, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's Link's Awakening Bloodborne with a little, like, bit of red wall splashed in there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I get the impression that basically the demo came out and they probably got some feedback and they want to adjust according to that feedback, which is never a bad idea.
It's also a game that so many eyes are on, right? Like Silksong, I think, showed that you can make a game for a really long time and it can become a meme that like, oh, you've delayed so many times. But Silksong came out and by all accounts was extremely good, and people are really happy with it. And so not to beat the one quote to death, you know, delayed game is you know, could be good, whatever. But yeah, I think this crew has especially earned some time to just say like, hey, we realized that we were going to launch this in a state that we didn't love, and we had the comfort and the luxury to do this. I feel like this is kind of, it's not exactly the same as what happened to Demon School. Demon School was they were very public about that was a publisher decision, but also the Demon School team was posting some of the stuff that they have added to that game because of the delay, and was showing the difference between like the original romance scene and then the new romance scenes that they've been able to add because of the delay. And it's like, oh yeah, that's great.
Totally. I think that's gonna work out for everybody in the end.
And you can't do that forever. You know, one of the hardest things in a creative endeavor is to set a deadline for yourself to say, I'm going to take my hands off this and stop and stop fidgeting and stop trying to make this perfect and just like be okay with the way it is right now. But I do think if you have the luxury and you know what you want to do, then yeah, hopefully it's a good thing for Mina. I demoed Mina years ago at this point.
Oh, really?
Like
I guess it's been a while.
Or something. Yeah, and there's been publicly available demos and stuff like that too. But it was really good when I played it. I loved it. It had a really goofy big hammer that felt very Bloodborne-y and was really fun to play. So can't wait for it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
If I've got a recommendation, if people want something to tide themselves over until Mina comes out, if you want solid top down like Zelda-ish game that's going for that Game Boy Color aesthetic, Colorgrave Studios, who made literally one of my favorite platformers of all time in Curse Crackers, which just a blanket recommendation for that. They came out with a game, I think, last year called Veritus, which I think is really charming and has a really great art style to it. Some good music. I think it's pretty cheap. And they're a small studio, but I really like what they're doing. They're making little stuff that has some cool weird mysteries behind it. Even Curse Crackers is a game that is like, oh, there's way more going on under the surface, both mechanically and narratively, with a lot of weird kind of spooky secrets sometimes. So I would maybe give that a try if you want that Game Boy Color top-down action feel. Oh, what else? Oh, Final Fantasy 14 patch 7.35 is out. That's got the new Deep Dungeon. That's got the Monster Hunter crossover stuff. There's a lot going on in there. I'd love to talk about it. And hey, I haven't announced it officially, but yes, Charlie and Dropouts is on a hiatus. We're too busy. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think it will come back. Like
we can roll on into the tavern though and talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Hey,
yeah, let's talk about it.
Come on, gang. We're heading to the tavern. That was me marking a place where the tavern is definitively happening, because that can happen now that Kat's gone.
Yeah, she was kind of hit and miss with that.
No more, oh yeah, we've She's been in the crazy. Tavern stumbling, for half an hour.
Stumbling into the tavern, yeah.
As one does.
The tavern has encompassed us, yeah.
We are definitively in the tavern now.
I'm in tavern mode.
Look, as I've taken on more responsibilities as one of the co-hosts of the main show, it means I have to devote a little bit more time to that. I'm also very busy. Like I said, I'm on tour right now with a show. And I haven't had time to play Final Fantasy XIV, let alone talk about it. Consider this the official announcement that it's on a bit of a hiatus. It'll come back. Even if we have to do some irregularly timed specials every once in a while, it's not ever going to go away. I have to figure out a workflow that makes sense now that I've stepped into a more active role. So we'll see what that looks like going forward. Hopefully we can kind of establish something for 2026. But
part of the problem, and I think it this is for you and I both, Victor, is that we both get so busy that, as you say, we don't really have time to play. And FF14 is a great game to put down and go back to later. We've talked about this many times on Charlene Dropouts. This is not a game that they want you to stay on and collect dailies and on all the stupid, like, you know, gacha stuff. If you need to take a break, you take a break. I think a lot of people forget that about FF14. And of course, I still love the game and I will go back to it. But right now I've got like five games to deal with at the same time. And this is the time of year where it gets really freaking busy. So I think this is something we'll definitely revisit when the new year starts, I think. Things settle down a bit.
But I've been trying
We love you, FF14 crew.
I've been trying to chew my way back through it just to try and get current again before I get left behind again. And so I'm somewhere in 7.3 right now. I was actually playing a little bit of it the other night because there's something like relaxing about, I was remarking that after playing so many other games, going back to 14, just hearing the little ping of like a new quest ding was like, yes, good.
It's always going to be my forever game. But sometimes I have to take a little bit of a step back. And that isn't to say that I wouldn't also be making a bunch of evergreen stuff that isn't tied to whatever is current in 14. Like the lore tour episodes of Dungeons that I'm really, really proud of. Mm-hmm. I think something I'd like to do in the new year is making video versions of those for our YouTube channel.
That'd be great.
We have some thoughts about that for sure.
So there's always going to be stuff. I have a document that is just a list of topics I could do when there's not much going on news-wise that I would love to work through. But unfortunately, I'm just real busy. And episodes like that do take a lot of work. It'll happen.
Thank you for your support and your hard work, Victor.
And also, even if I'm not doing the show at that time, I still always try to pop in as much as I can for our community FF14 nights. I know some people are working on the new Deep Dungeons this week. They've made a lot of progress in the Dawn Trail Extremes. So if you're listening to this and you want a little bit of that Axe of the Blood God Final Fantasy 14 flavor, go hang out with our crew on our community nights, because it is a wonderful, wonderful group of people, and playing with them over the past few years has been the highlight of my 14 experience. Mm-hmm. So
indeed,
that's what I have to say about that. What else we got for the tavern?
Good question.
I don't really know. This is already kind of a long episode, so we don't need to make it longer episode.
Oh, yeah, we're good for time. Hey, Nadia, take us home.
Yeah.
Okay, I got one for you. We're talking about ghosts. Have you ever had a ghost encounter? I'm not sure. It was either a ghost or a paralysis demon. When I was, how old was I? I must have been like 16. I was kind of sleeping and I woke up and there was the shadow of a woman standing over me. And she had...
All right.
She was holding out an orange cat. Just holding out this orange cat to me. I'm like staring at her. She's staring at me. And I think I said... you know, hello or whatever, and she dissipated. And that stayed with me for a very long time. And that could have been sleep paralysis. So I'll go with a ghost story that makes me very happy. So last year we had to put down, well, he died, actually, our cat Tango. And sometime later, earlier this year, I had this really vivid dream where I'm sitting on the bed reading and Tango comes out from under the bed, and he looked great. He was all sleek and, you know, in his prime. And I'm like, Tango, did you come from the pet cemetery? And, you know, he doesn't answer. Of course he doesn't. And I said, you know what, sometimes dead is better. And he just kind of walked away, and it wasn't like, you know, it was a good feeling. He wasn't like ignoring me or anything. He was just like, hey, look at me, I'm a cat, how you doing? Look, don't I look great? Okay, I'm gone, bye. So I just think it's so funny that I said that line to him in my dream.
That's pretty like, good.
Did you come from the pet cemetery? Even dinking around with that burial ground? What did I tell you?
There is a weird thing that I've found with dead pet dreams. We're talking dead pet dreams on Axe of the Blood God today.
Cat, come back.
My childhood dog passed away about 10 years ago now. And he was truly my best buddy. And about once a year, I would have a dream where... within the dream, it would have to involve time travel or dimension hopping. Like, even in the conceit of the dream, it wasn't like, oh, my dog is back. It was, I've found some kind of workaround or technology or some kind of phenomenon that will allow me to go visit a version of my dog.
Interesting.
Which I thought was very fun and very sweet.
That's really cool.
And I think it's funny that even in my dream, I can't just like, no, we're not... We can't just, it can't be a metaphysical thing. It has to be, there has to be a rational reason, man. Why I can visit my dead dog.
Have either of you ever done like a Ouija board?
As a kid, yeah.
Nope.
Because
my
brother was having a birthday party and they did a Ouija board, but they made it out of a pizza box.
Sure.
And our slider, whatever you want to call it, was a glass
planchette.
With a little piece of... planchette, thank you.
Yes.
It was a glass, like a squat glass, with a little piece of masking tape on top so you could see where the it was pointing. And there was actually a moment where, you know, the candle started going crazy and the glass started tipping over. And it's like, I'm not necessarily going to say, yeah, ghosts exist, man. But I do certainly feel that there are much bigger things, much bigger forces around us. And maybe we, as a species, have these abilities... because we are a very connected group of people. We have to be to survive. Maybe we just don't know what we can do when we're together. And I don't know. It was such a weird experience.
You know what? That is a phenomenon, though.
Is it? Tell me about this phenomenon.
I can't remember what it's... It's auto something. But it is the phenomenon that occurs that is a testable thing, that when people are using a Ouija board, they will subconsciously do stuff to it. Just as because it's expectation and there's a physiological thing that happens when you're doing something like that.
What about the candles though? Like they were going wild.
Wind does that to candles.
but it wasn't windy. Anyway, go ahead, Eric.
Y'all are fucking crazy, all right? Because and I'm not talking about believing ghosts, not believing ghosts. That's not meant for us, man. That's a, y'all.
Are you? This is
y'all,
a Christian.
Y'all are just opening the door and being like, "Let's let some demons in."
Is this
in.
Our
like,
post
okay,
show? Is this our what post if it, show?
What if it works? Did you
Eric?
Think about that?
Let's this sounds like a fun post show. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Y'all are fucking crazy, man.
Really?
Yeah, let's go down to the bottom of the ocean too and see what's down there where man was never supposed to go and should not go and is not meant to exist. Yeah, let's go find out what's down there. That won't be awful for everyone.
Let's
hey, who says the youth pastor cometh.
Youth pastor. I'm not having like a religious response to this. I'm having a rational response to this. You say, I've got a book. Let's try and summon a demon. I'm going to say no, because it's either going to not work and we've wasted a perfectly good, you know, Thursday evening or whatever, or it's going to work and now we've summoned a demon. That's like rational thought process.
We're going to take this to the post show where God can't find us. thank you so much. He can't get behind the paywall.
Yeah. Can't see indoors either.
I'm not paying $5. What is this shit?
Thank
Curse
you so
you
much
for 40
joining
generations.
Us for this incredibly scary episode of Acts of the... What did I say? Acts of the Blood Pod? No. Blood... No.
Something
blood
like
Ghost... Ghost of the Blood...
Blood God's already scary.
Yeah.
We've got an axe.
Blood of the Axe God.
Next Halloween, we've got to make it a... We got to do a real Adams Family thing where it's called, like... Fucking whatever. I'll figure it out. I'll figure out a bit for next year. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, patreon.com/bloodgodpod. Go get your ad-free episodes, your newsletters, your access to the pantheons and the side quests. Appreciate you all. It's been a real slice. For Eric, for Nadia, for myself, happy adventuring.
Guess I should have held back.